back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and it's a very, very special week. That's right, on September 19th, so a couple of days after this episode drops, we are going to hit the actual 60th anniversary of the publication of The Big Honey Hunt by Stanley and Janice Berenstain. The book that started it all. The book that, if it did not exist, I would not exist. I mean, okay, the show would not exist. I might exist, but I mean, I might not, though. That's a huge butterfly effect. If this book hadn't come out, who knows what would have happened? Would my parents have ever even met? I don't know. I mean, it's worth thinking about, but it's not worth thinking about today because we are celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Berenstain Bears. There's so much happening this year. There's so many wonderful new products, so many great Berenstain Bears books coming out, some beautiful ones that we're going to be covering near the end of the year. Just a smorgasbord of Berenstain Bears excitement. And speaking of excitement, I could not celebrate the 60th anniversary of this book series without the man himself. So, on today's episode, this week's episode, this is not a daily show. On this week's episode, Mike Berenstain is joining me again to talk about the Bears, talk about his parents, and talk about some exciting stuff coming up this year, including a big announcement that's not really an announcement, it's more a tentative announcement that comes at the end of the episode. So you're going to have to listen to the whole thing to find out what it is. That's my way of improving my listening stats. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, listeners of all ages, please welcome back to the show, Mike Berenstain. Thank you for joining me today. I'm really excited to talk to you about the 60th anniversary.
And I want to thank you for recognizing it because nobody else has the slightest interest in the 60th. Oh. I'm pleased that somebody cares.
Well, I was just going to say the Bucks County Herald did an article on it.
Really?
They did a little thing, the Berenstain Bears 60th anniversary in the Bucks County Herald. So it's a short article, but it recognizes it.
I didn't realize that. Well, then I take it back.
I am once again riding on the coattails of the Bucks County Herald.
Well, I appreciate that, but I can tell you that when I brought it up a while back, you know, leading into it with Random House and HarperCollins, there was like, oh, that's nice, and then that was the last I heard.
I mean, we put a lot of stock in, I think, multiples of 5 and 10. So
it's because we have 10 digits.
Yes.
Fingers and toes.
Right. Had we had 12, you would be too busy to talk to me today.
Yeah, there's a lot of toes.
Yeah. It is.
And of course the Bears only have 8, you know, because there was the innovation when the animation started from 10 to 8. That was back in the 80s. They were still doing all hand animation.
Yeah.
And animators didn't animate 5 fingers, you know, 4 fingers and a thumb. They just did 3 fingers.
Right. Well, it's understandable.
It's too complicated to do 4 animated fingers. So we converted everything. In fact, I recently realized that there was a little transition period in the books in the 80s where some of the characters, although my parents had decided they'd be consistent with the animated shows and have just 3 fingers instead of the traditional 4, there's a few books where a vestigial 4th finger shows up. And not consistently. It sort of pops up once in a while. I was referencing something for some particular reference that I was doing, and I realized, wait a minute, this character in this page, Papa Bear, has a 4th finger. On the next page, he only has 4. And it freaked me out. And I went back and I looked, and I realized for a few years, that would pop up occasionally. They hadn't quite made the mental transition to just the 3-fingered hand.
Well, now I've got to go back and look at all those books again.
I forget which ones exactly, but it was... Talk about, you know, deep trivia.
Yeah. If any of my listeners out there want to go through all the books and find the ones with the odd number of fingers.
I think they made the transition to 3 fingers because of the CBS show.
Yeah.
That was 84, 85. Mm-hmm. So it was in about there that this weird transition of the disappearing, reappearing vestigial pinky finger shows up occasionally.
How much do you know, did they feel... it was necessary to match up what was being printed in the books to what was being shown on television?
Well, clearly somewhat. I mean, that's sort of when, you know, because as you know, and maybe a lot of you know, that they went through a long evolution of appearance from the first book in 62. And a lot of changes in the length of the nose, how the hair looks, how the fingernails work, all these different portions of the body, the legs, they gradually evolved. But then I think when the CBS show was done in that mid-80s, that's when my parents decided, well, we need to kind of try to standardize the look of it and lock them down and not change them. So they took that, they took that seriously. I don't know that they really wanted to match exactly the look of the animation style, but they wanted to make it consistent of a piece, and they didn't want it to change. Of course, they then did change after that inadvertently, which I think I've listened to some of your broadcasts, and you've noticed that in some of the books, there's a kind of distinctive sub-genre of style.
Now, where do you put the line for the sub-genre of style?
Well, the sub-genre that you've mentioned, and it always seems to be the same style. You've mentioned they look kind of weird to you. Mm-hmm. They were done in around 2010 period.
Yeah.
That's my mom.
Okay.
She kind of went in a different direction at the end of her career.
Interesting.
And of course, whatever she went, so the books that she did entirely herself, where nobody else was involved like me or freelance artist or something, they have a very distinctive Jan look in that period. And it just, that's the way she felt it.
Amazing. So
it was kind of, the colors are kind of brighter, flatter, mm-hmm. They're more designy. The characters, the whole technique is a little looser.
Yeah.
There's just a slightly different distinctive look to those books that she did in her 80s. And of course I wasn't going to tell her not to do that. And I was trying to keep everything consistent with the way it had looked, say, in the late 90s or early 2000s, when things were kind of had been standardized. Mm-hmm. Of course, I wasn't really successful in that, but that was my goal.
Right.
But my mom she was going to do it however, that's just the way she rolled. You know?
Oh, they were her bears.
Exactly. the only time I tried to make general suggestions with her is when she started to revert to some cartooning techniques in her layouts, which were very nice, but I occasionally thought they might be confusing for children. A thing that my parents really liked to do in their magazine cartoons was kind of time-lapsed scenes, mm-hmm. like a character in one scene doing things that are happening at different times. Like, it's a kind of a classic cartoon technique. Like, a character cleaning up the house. So you show that same character all over the house cleaning, but it looks like it's all in one picture, but they're at different times.
Right.
So she would occasionally put that into one of the layouts of the Bear books. And they looked great. They were fun. I liked them. But I didn't think a three-year-old would quite pick up on the conception of that time lapse.
Yeah.
So I would suggest that she would break it up into different sections. She grudgingly agreed.
Now, she
liked it the way she had done it.
Of course.
Just artistically, it was good. But I was kind of concerned about the comprehensibility of the book.
Well, does this tie into the what you had talked about a while ago about the books aiming at younger and younger readers as time went along?
Yeah, although I think even for kids like 5, 6, that might have been a little challenging.
Okay.
But certainly if you're going down to kids, I mean, people are buying picture books now that normally we would have thought of back in the old days as for K4 to 6, like K1 kind of books.
Yeah.
They're going for toddlers. They're just buying anything for kids down as young as 1 year old.
Right.
Even if they're not really intended for that. So you have to consider that, okay, that's how the books are actually being used and consumed.
This does go a long way to explain, because right now in the show, I'm in the 2011-2012 era. So there are books coming out.
That was a weird era.
There's the Zonder Kids line, and then there's the main title line. And I think I've said it many times recently that I have fallen in love with the Zonder Kids line in a way I didn't think I was going to.
Those early books, where I did them with a freelance artist, mm-hmm. where I was basically the art director and the corrector and the manager, and the artist did the final work. And one of the reasons I liked him for those books is because he was wonderful at beautiful nature details, like little cute little animals and flowers and trees. So I emphasized that in the books because I knew this particular artist was really, really good at that.
The Zonder Kids line from that time introduces, I believe, I can't remember her name. She's the friend of
the goofy kid,
the goofy kid with the glasses and the
who everybody picks on, but then you learn not to pick on
because right.
Trudy Brunowitz. I can't remember. it's been a while. I last had her. I shifted her over to HarperCollins line, so she was in the talent show.
Okay.
So it's Trudy Grzowski. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think it's not Brunowitz. I thought it was Brunowitz.
No, that's somebody else.
Okay. Well, because I was going to ask if you had a freelancer working on those books, so would you design the character,
yeah,
and then present it to them and say like, okay, this is what she looks like. This is how she moves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we try to keep it consistent after that.
But what I've enjoyed about this era of the Zondra Kids books is how you're calling back to previous Berenstain Bears adventures. I just did.
We just did that because I liked it. It's fun.
Well, yeah. God Bless Our Home, which is basically like, I know you've all wondered how the home got remodeled over the years. Well, here it is. And of course, I eat that stuff up. That's like my bread and butter.
Well, actually, one of the background of that is the classic Jan Stan kind of give and take or yin and yang between them. Some kid wrote in, some smart ass kid wrote in at one point, a long time ago, about pointing out the discrepancy between the new baby, where it said that Papa Bear carved, built the thing out of a tree and great mighty oak and carved it all out, and then Moving Day, where they move into it's already built.
Right.
And when my mom brought this up to my dad that they had this continuity discrepancy, he said some rude remark or something. And so she had to then, but she felt obligated to come up with a rational, decent explanation. And what she said to the kid in the letter was that, yes, it was already existing when they moved into it, but then Papa Bear extended it and enlarged it and worked on it to make it bigger. So I took that old story my mother told me, I made that basis for that book about that's what he does, So it kind of merged the two conflicting continuities.
Right. Well, again, as the garage appeared and became the shed, and
that's actually garage is a problem. That garage sometimes inadvertently disappears in some of the illustrations.
Yeah.
And that's not intentional. That's just sometimes mistakes happen.
Right. Well, sometimes it takes them an hour to get to Farmer Ben's, and sometimes Farmer Ben is just close.
Yeah, well,
that's
just, artistic license.
Yes.
I filed with the local government for artistic license, and I have it hanging on the wall.
Well, my excuse is always, it's Bear Country. You don't always take the shortest way to get somewhere. You like to take a look at the countryside, so you take that sunny dirt road.
Also, it's not a real place.
Right. Well, that too.
So it's a question of how much you like your consistent continuity in a fantasy world or not.
Right.
If you really like continuity,
yeah,
then that's going to be make you deeper. But if you're kind of loosey-goosey about that, then it's fine.
What you're saying is you're not J.R.R. Tolkien. You're not.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I would not pretend to be J.R.R.
Well, flashing back 60 years, I think as of next week is the 60th anniversary of the original public.
I didn't even know what the publication date was in 1962. How did you find that out?
I think I Googled it and it was like September X, Y, and Z. That's the, I think, official date. I don't know when it actually,
Well, that probably, somebody probably did the research like with the Library of Congress or something.
Yeah. So as of the book hitting the shelves, that's 60 years ago. As you said, the Bears evolved a lot over the years. But looking back, like at that time when that book was coming out, when that book first hit the shelves and became the, obviously no one knew the sensation it was going to create. No. But what are your personal memories of that time?
Oh. Well, I actually am prepared for that. This is the first Berenstain Bear.
Wow. So it's a drawing of what looks like Small Bear.
Yeah, I think that was the first envision of, was a little doodle of Small Bear. That hung on my parents' bulletin board for decades. Mm. And was sort of reminding them where they started with it. And I think that must have been done like 1961, because there was a long lead-in. And my memory of it, I remember that being on their bulletin. I remember them seeing them, when they were first doing those sketches, I remember seeing that on their drawing board. So I was what, eight years old when they were first developing it. And I remember very vividly them drawing these bears. And I remember that, you know, the first version of it was Freddy Bear Spanking.
Yeah.
And a little episode in it about Honey for Honey then developed into the Honey Hunt as they worked with Geisel and Phil Cerf. It evolved from that. And I remember them showing me, before they ever showed it to Geisel and those people, the Freddy Bear Spanking version, like the sketch version. And I found it very embarrassing as a kid, because that was back in an era where everybody got spanked. I mean, it wasn't anything, people probably had some horrific notion about spanking. It was like a couple of swats on the bottom if you did something dangerous. Or my parents basically was, if I did, I basically tried to kill my brother once.
Okay.
It wasn't intentional. It would have been homicide. It would have been manslaughter.
Okay.
But I tried to kill him by knocking him off his bike when he was going at full speed, and he fell off his bike, and it could have killed him because he got really beat up. I was just trying to hurt him. I wasn't trying to kill him. Well, he had, with my bike.
Oh,
my
okay.
new bike that I got for my birthday, he stole it and wouldn't get back to me. So I threw a big stick at him and it knocked him off the bike. And he almost got killed. And I got swatted for that. And
yeah.
Seemed just. But anyway, you know, that's not something kids like to dwell on. The whole issue is thinking. It's embarrassing. Like, that's a lousy idea for a book. Kid getting spanked. Fully on that. So I remember being very kind of annoyed and outraged. They thought this was funny. This is a big joke. This little bear is going to get spanked because he did something wrong. That stinks. I just remember being very happy when that got dumped and they belonged to the Honey Hunt. But I remember that very vividly because it ticked me off. I thought, that stinks.
Wait, so
what do they think they're doing? You know,
did that incident become the green-eyed monster?
I don't know. All this stuff goes back to the early magazine cartoons. You know?
Because that's a book about kids fighting over a bike.
Oh yes, you're right. I forgot. Yeah, that is what that's from. Yeah. Well, you're right. That was from the great Leo almost getting killed. He still has a scar on his chin where it got stitched up, but he has a beard now, so he never was here.
Oh my goodness. The things you learn.
Right on his chin.
That's funny because my daughter has a scar right under her chin from where she got knocked.
Yeah, most kids do. They got a scar somewhere like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the book comes out. It gets rewritten and it comes out. And do you ever, because you've sort of lived with this your entire life?
Yeah, that's the truth, boy.
Do you ever notice a shift from my parents are kind of plugging away at this to my parents are suddenly household names?
No, because the era even before the bears, they were very well known as magazine cartoons.
Yeah.
Now people didn't really know the name, like, unless people who had some reason to be interested in cartoons, but everybody knew their cartoons. It's hard to imagine the world of today that the woman's family magazine was a big deal back then.
Yeah.
Everybody, if something was in McCall's magazine every month, everybody knew about it. And I realized it's an era that's almost impossible to imagine, like imagining the Paleolithic or, you know, like dinosaurs wandering around. But that's the way it was. Everybody knew the cartoon series It's All in the Family. So if somebody said, well, what are your parents? Oh, they do that cartoon series It's All in the Family. And people, jaws would drop. It's like, they're famous. That's the most famous thing in the world. So when it shifted to the bears, and of course, at first, I don't think they weren't even really the Berenstain Bears at first. That was something that evolved gradually.
Yeah.
The second book had that name. And so the whole business to the fame of it was something that evolved very gradually until it became kind of critical mass. And,
yeah.
You know, it blows up in the world of internet conspiracies.
Well, yeah.
By that time, it's just like, this is beyond belief. You know?
What's amazing is that the bears have come back in the public consciousness in the last year. Like, we're starting to see, well, right. I interviewed Jan Armstrong from Solid Roots.
I did see you had done that. Thank you. I'm sure that makes her feel good about licensing the Berenstain Bears.
And, you know, we talked a little bit in there about when I talked to Eleanor, it was sort of about this resurgence now in marketing and in things that you can buy that aren't that aren't just capturing the nostalgia market now. It's like, now the people have gone through nostalgia, and it seems to be like, okay, now we'll buy games based on the Bears. And
it's both because there are lines of clothing like T-shirts and things that are marketed toward young adults.
Yes.
So those, that's nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know? So it's both.
I think it's amazing because the Berenstain Bears, and you talked about this years ago when we talked about the attempts to write the movie, is the Berenstain Bears never went ironic. There's no sense of like, it's the Berenstain Bears, wink. So people who are buying these shirts and buying these sheets and these new items that are available, there's a pureness, if I may use the word, to their affection.
That's a good word in this modern day and age. It's not one you often run into.
Yeah,
that's a good word.
Sincerity, I guess is like,
sincerity is good too.
Yeah, I think one of the things that have kept the Bears going so long is that they've never lost that sincerity. That like they are still, you are still trying to write about people being good people.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do we think we're doing? Well, I was just talking to somebody professionally about that. And we were discussing that very issue. And I said, well, you know, I think it may simply come back from the fact that my parents came out of a very different world, the Depression and World War II. And they were kind of this self-invented generation after the war. And that was an era of where traditional values were not associated with anything particular. They simply were kind of, that's the way people, that sort of was just kind of standard decent behavior across the society. It didn't have any kind of, it wasn't loaded with any kind of particular ideological significance, or it wasn't like you were on one side or the other. It was just sort of, this is the way people act and everybody agrees on this. And that's what I grew up with. They grew up very poor. And I'm poor by our standards. I don't think they perceived themselves as being very poor.
Right.
They were in families who were struggling in the Depression. And, they went through the war. My mom was an aircraft riveter. My dad was in the Army. He was blind in one eye, but he was in the Army anyway, because that's the kind of war that was.
Right.
They were just kind of normal, average, middle-class folks in the 50s.
Yeah.
And espousing the kind of normal, Walter Cronkite, Leave It to Beaver kind of world of that world, where nobody really thought that meant anything in particular. It wasn't like anybody was on anybody's particular agenda there. And that's what I grew up with. And I kind of embraced that point of view. And then I think it was reinforced raising my own kids and kind of influences that they were exposed to in our world. And I guess I think what we're talking about is it's being old fashioned without it having any other agenda.
Right.
I may put it that way.
Right.
These days, that kind of thing has become associated with and embraced by all kinds of people with really bizarre agenda. And that's not something my parents were sympathetic to. It's not something I'm sympathetic to. So there you have it.
Well, yeah, they don't. I think that the Bears, bad faith actors tend to talk about the Berenstain Bears like they are like pining for the old days, when I see the Bears as, personally, I see them as saying, no, these values are applicable today. Like you can still treat other people as you would like to be treated. You can still have respect for people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not saying, well, as Mama Bear said in the In Crowd, some people like to make themselves feel big by putting other people down. And that's not a good thing. And that's not what these books are all about.
Right. And if the Berenstain Bears were stuck in the past, we would not have had the In Crowd, which has probably some of my guests' favorite Berenstain Bears fashions of all times.
The very 70s. Also, I wanted to mention something, which I enlist, because I find some of your, I look at what you're going to be talking about. And if it's a book that is nostalgic for me, like a book I worked on with my mom or something, I want to know what's it. So it's I'm and you've mentioned Mama's funny vest.
We love the vest.
Well, and then I explained that was innovation by my mom, who got tired of painting all the little white dots and wanted to cut down all the white dots. And I've continued it because this is sort of how the look that evolved. And also, I don't want to paint the white dots either.
Right, it's a lot of dots.
And you have to realize that when you're painting this, we do it in watercolor. So you paint the blue dress all blue, and then you go back with bleed-proof white with a little brush, and you paint in all those little dots. And if Mama Bear's in every book, that takes several days. You know, it's like this dot, 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 dot. And it's not a lot of fun. But I think in one of your comment on the funny vest, you asked, well, where did this style come from? Look up pictures of my mom in later life on the internet. That was one of her looks.
That was one of her looks?
Vest, long sweater vest.
We never knew.
Put Mama Bear in her kind of way she dressed in her later life. So,
amazing. We're learning so much.
The maroon, the magenta, I don't think necessarily, but she wanted a nice bright color to contrast with the cerulean blue.
That's brilliant. So now we've gotten the bike accident and we've gotten the...
It's all worked in this. I don't know if you realize that I've been working in stuff from the old magazine cartoons into the books lately, just out of kind of nostalgic perversity.
Well, I just got the Big Paw book, the new Big Paw book.
Ah, good. Good, because that was a really an undertaking.
Yeah. Which I'm going to be jumping ahead this year to cover because it's such an incredible publication.
Well, I can agree with you because I take very little credit for it except for bringing it to the public attention, because the whole point of it is to bring forth this marvelous artwork that my parents did and as preparation for one of the TV shows, the Big Paw Thanksgiving special.
Yeah. And this artwork had originally appeared where?
Never appeared before.
So this was all archived.
It's been in a file drawer in the basement for the last 40 years. I don't know.
This is even different from the artwork that had appeared in like the magazine supplementals.
This has never been published.
Wow.
This was done purely for the pitch. I can use Hollywood terms because this is a Hollywood thing. Mm-hmm. They did a pitch. The producers, which was Buzz Potemkin, who you did a piece on, I think. Mm-hmm. Buzz Potemkin and his people did a pitch to NBC for this sequel to the Christmas special, a Thanksgiving special. And my parents did this artwork to present to the NBC to sell the show. And that was its only use. And then it got put in a drawer and sold the show. I think the animators must have used it as a guide for some of the scenes. So it was used like the background scenes and so on. And I knew it existed, but I never really thought about it much. And then I just... as I came across it and going organizing files over the years, I thought, I've got to do something with this marvelous artwork. And finally, I got it into publication in a form, which wasn't really how I wanted to publish it, but this is what I could manage. So I think it works.
It does. It looks fantastic. And it's interesting because The Legend of Big Paw is one of the most retold Berenstain Bears stories.
Yeah.
Like it's been told in pretty much any format.
Yeah, but but all those earlier retellings are long out of print. Mm-hmm. So this is bringing it to, and I'm sure, you know all about the old books that are out of print, but people these days, most people have no recollection. I'm sure that the collectors, Brad and Jeremy, they know all about those out of print books, but most people today who even know and collect Berenstain Bear books currently, they have no idea about books from like 20 years ago. So this will be introducing Big Paw to a new generation.
And in a beautiful looking book. So you had said that this is so. Is there other? Because I don't. So the way it works is, I don't tend to read the newest books because I'm focused on
they're out of sequence for you,
right? And I don't want to like spoil myself too much on the new ones. But so you said that are you finding uses for older artwork in more books than just?
Well, no, I'm talking about going back to the pre-Bear cartoons. Like magazine things, the kind of subject matter and plot points and gags. Which I love because that's what I grew up with. I was a little kid when my parents were doing the magazine gag cartoons, and I thought they were hilarious. And they were about my life. The All in the Family, the Harveys, was about everything that was happening every day in my life. That's what most of the gags.
Yeah.
So I'm very nostalgic, kind of self-indulgently nostalgic for that content.
Yeah.
And if I can figure out some way to work it into a Bear book, then I do.
That's great.
Of course, the publishers, they don't know. They don't care. They right. don't care about something that appeared in McCall's magazine in 1959. What do they care?
Right.
As long as it works as a kid's book, they're happy.
Yeah, and it's a style of humor. It's there. They are. It's a level of gag based comedy that you don't see in a lot of kids' books these days.
No, in fact, the most recent one where I did that was Share and Share Alone, HarperCollins okay. I Can Read book, which is about sharing a swimming pool, about sharing the wonderful happiness of having a backyard swimming pool, and it's all based on a What's All in the Family, McCall's magazine series from the late 50s. And it's just, the gags in it are just straight from McCall's magazine. So if you want to know what the world was like in 1959, it's just a pure adaptation of the elements. I even actually took some of the actual images and kind of adapted them from
yeah.
the cartoons. Confessions of a family plagiarist.
Look, you've been doing this for a long time. I think you're allowed to dip into the well every once in a while.
I view it as like what Disney does with Mickey Mouse, where they go back.
Of course.
And they do Fantasia 2 or things like that. Same thing.
And like you said, like no one's going to like call you on reusing a 60. I mean, Charles Schulz reused the same gag within the Peanuts comic strip a couple of times. So, how many times did Snoopy try to get a cookie out of the cookie jar?
I loved Peanuts growing up, but I don't remember the cookie jar part. Maybe that was after I was followed.
It was probably after you left off. In the 80s, there was a lot of Snoopy in the cookie jar.
I still would look at it occasionally, but I had other things on my mind in the 80s besides. Yep. No, when I was a kid, I collected they had these editions that were the collections of them. I had them all. I loved them.
I've had one of the people who runs the Charles Schulz Museum on the show before, and I also had on the show Paul V. Allen, who wrote the I Can Read It All By Myself book. And how much did you talk to him?
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. No, he interviewed everybody, everybody he has in that book who was still on deck. He interviewed, he did a very thorough job. So we talked a lot and emailed back and forth a lot. And he had me review the chapters relating to Stan and Jan, and I would tweak any things that maybe got a little garbled and update things. So it was a very thorough process he did.
And I'll say, like, just reading the Berenstain Bears entries in that book, like, it's amazing that there is so much history behind each individual book. Like,
well, especially back in the Geisel era, because they went through so many different versions of
it. Yeah.
Just, it was mind-boggling, the doing and redoing that they did on those things with Geisel.
Well, and it struck me when I talked to you at your studio and, reading this book, just how different, how the people putting together children's books at that time, there was a very thin line between who was writing children's books and who was writing, smart commentary on American life in the Atlantic or whatever. Like, there wasn't quite the barrier between, like, you're a children's book writer, you're a children's book illustrator.
Yeah, well, that's very true.
Yeah.
And I never really thought about that before. You mentioned it just now, which is interesting. It shows you the shallowness of my thoughts about American history and culture. But you're right. And I don't really know why that is. It has something, and, whenever I see life in the world today, I always think, boy, this is really different than what I'm used to. So, I think it probably has to do with the kind of what I was speaking about, the generalism of American culture at that time. Mm-hmm. The society was not as culturally compartmentalized and channeled off into different separate streams and backwaters. Like, you had three TV channels.
Right.
You had, there were newspapers. There was, there were some national magazines. There were some radio programs. That was it. It's hard to, like, when a good story, I think, example of this is when Sputnik was launched. That's the first thing in the outside world that I think I have a clear memory of. you know, you remember things like in your own family or house, personal life. But in the broader world, I think Sputnik, because I must have been like, I don't know, five. So I was pretty young, but it somehow that, I guess, space and rocket ships and things meant something to me. So the whole idea of this thing being shot into outer space and it's going around the world, I kind of understood it. And it was a big deal. Everybody was talking about it. And it was so universal. And everybody was on the same timing with it, that it was printed in the newspaper when you could see it going over just after sunset over the Philadelphia area, and where to look in the sky, and you would see this little glowing dot being caught in the sunset. And so we went out at the end of my driveway, the family, in the evening to watch it go over. And everybody else on the street was at the end of their driveway waiting for it to go over. And you could hear everybody as they finally spotted it say, oh, look, there it is, everybody. So I think, I don't think that would happen now. You know, that this kind of everybody, there's a scene in some movie where they tell, in some science fiction movie, where they tell everybody to go outside their door and look to see if a criminal is escaping. I think it's Fahrenheit 451. Where the main guy, the Oscar Werner, I think his name is escaping. Uh-huh. And they tell everybody who's watching TV to go outside and look to see if they see this guy. And everybody in a whole country goes out and looks at the same time. That's sort of what it was like.
Yeah.
And I think that's so generally changed that there was more continuity in the culture in general. And what you're talking about is similar. Things were just sort of kind of closer together, more integrated with each other, including things in the Atlantic and children's books being published. That's my big answer.
There you go. It works for me.
This is what happens when you interview old people. They start to go off on these ridiculous meandering tangents. So you asked to interview, so this is what you get. You're going to have to edit this, Heather.
Oh, no, Mike, you don't understand. I've been doing, I don't know if you know this, but I have been doing a Berenstain Bears podcast for over 7 years.
Yeah, what do you think? Well, I admire your tenacity. Very tenacious. You must have been raised to be tenacious. Did you have very tenacious parents?
Well, I have very tenacious parents, but there's also that thing of just like, I've got to see this through. Like, I've got to see this through. Like, I don't know when I think I'm going to end this. But well, you know,
another thing that comes to mind in my cultural history that makes me think of that is the Vietnam War. They kept saying, we have to keep doing this because we have to see it through. We can't let all those lives go to waste. Wait. So there is a moral, kind of a moral to be learned from that kind of, you know, I don't think you're going to grow that. I don't think it's going to actually.
I don't think I'm going to start wearing a shirt that says the Berenstain Bears are my Vietnam. Like, I don't. If that's the point you're trying to make.
I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. That's going to be a but, you know, it reminds me of in history, there have been times when people have gotten, you know, digging into something and sticking with it because of so much that has gone before, and we have to just.
Oh, yeah, no.
By keeping going with what we've been doing, and I'm concerned. I'm concerned. Maybe if you feel the need to, maybe you can just. Let it go, to quote our pal Elsa.
Well, if I didn't keep meeting such fascinating people doing this, maybe I would.
Well, I'm glad you.
But there are so many people that I just, well, like Jan Armstrong a few weeks ago.
Yeah, no, she is a great story and a great accomplishment. Yeah,
and you find out
those are really nice games they made. I thought I was very impressed with them.
They're amazing, and it all ties in with the whole point of Deep in Bear Country, which is that there is pop cultural ephemera that you don't realize has a story behind it until you take the time to talk to the people who created it and really look at it like what it is, which is art. And that was, you know, when I first contacted you and said, I want to do this podcast and I want to, you know, just sort of look at every single Berenstain Bears book ever written. And then, of course, I met Brad and Jeremy, who were like, there's no way you're ever going to cover every single Berenstain Bears book ever written.
They know.
Look, I just got the Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful coloring book for my own amusement. Really? And I did not know it had a story in it.
I don't think I have one of those anymore. I don't know that I know there was such a thing, but you know what happened with Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful?
What?
My parents were very delighted with it, the whole idea that we were going to do this for the Department of Transportation or whatever it was, I forget. But what happened is they pulled out of it eventually because local politicians were using them in political events, like campaign events. They were giving them away, they were getting them from the Department of Transportation or Environmental Protection, being free. And when they'd have like campaign rallies for elections, they'd give them away like the Bears were sponsoring this candidate. And my parents found out that they were so ticked off.
Wow.
That they said, we're pulling, when you can't use this anymore.
So. Well, I'm going to have to share that with Brad and Jeremy because they don't think they know that.
I don't think anybody knows that except maybe some of the jerky politicians.
Right. No, but Brad did have a question for you. He wanted to know if you can remember what was the first chapter book you worked on. What was the first chapter book you worked on?
That's a good question. The one where the about the you know, the romance between brother and the new girl.
Oh, new girl in town.
That's what it's called. It was something like that. That was. Well, yeah, that was the first one I worked on. I did all the artwork on that myself, except my dad did the cover.
Okay.
Because he did really good covers, and I was, at that point, my covers were a little wonky. I got better.
And
early stage at learning to do the Bears, that I wasn't really that, my color wasn't that good yet, because it had a distinctive style. But the black and white, I was able to come up with a decent look for that.
Yeah. Well, it helped that they were chapter books, and so the look of the Bears, the chapter books have a distinct look to the Bears anyway, right. Because you're calling on the Cubs to do things they had never done before.
Right, it was all a little older, a little more like instead of first, second grade, more like third grade, fourth grade, maybe shifting to fifth grade, sixth grade a little bit.
And was Leo writing the books at that time?
He and my dad collaborated on it. Yes.
Okay.
And I think Brad actually asked me to kind of chapter and verse go through them and figure out who did what. I don't know.
Oh.
That was and I said, I'm sorry, I just can't figure it out. I mean, some of them I remember, like the new, I remember I did all the artwork on that book and my dad did the cover. But on most of them, we were all working on them just like here, you do this, I'll do this. And I can't finish this, you finish it. I remember on some of them, I was doing the art, but then my dad did the cross hatching on work, and then I would do the wash, and I don't remember who did that, so
and how do you credit that? It's like
we all worked on that was, we were all working on them together as a big happy family.
It's like trying to it's like when they would try to figure out who really wrote which Beatles song, and you're like,
I suppose that would be challenging.
Paul and John sat down, but then George threw in this thing in the middle, and
it's a collaboration.
A true collaboration.
Later, when like things I was working on with just my mom and my dad, or with my mom, I can remember more specifically. But that, and also we were working on a lot of other things collaboratively at that same time in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Like all the Golden Cub Club series. Mm. I was working on that with my dad, and it was so much stuff. And also those books that were published by Good Times, the video distributor.
Yeah.
We were all working on that, and we were working with freelance artists because we couldn't. It was too much for us.
Well, now it's 2022.
Yeah.
60 years have gone by since the big honey hunt. The Bears still like honey, still live in a tree down a sunny dirt road. Where do you see, what's happening to the Bears now, like looking into the future?
Talk about a separate continuity. I mean, the big project right now, we don't know where it's going to go, is a movie for Disney streaming for Disney Plus. Disney acquired first it was Fox, but then Fox got bought by Disney.
So right.
Disney acquired the rights over a year ago, and they have scripts. I've gone through two scripts, and we have character designs, and they are a distinctive new Bear continuity. They're not simply, they're a new Disney streaming, Disney Plus Bears. Now, I think they're great, but they're a little different.
Yeah.
I think there was time for this particular application. You need a new distinctive set of looks and characters. And I think, so the initial take on the characters is very good. Now, whether our pals out there are actually going to make this movie and release it on Disney Plus is, I think in another couple of years, we will know the answer, because that's sort of when they have their limit for when they can start principal animation. So. That's potentially the next big thing.
Wow. Wow. I thought you were going to say like new bed sheets or something.
No, as I say, I mean, the characters have been, and I don't want to use, technical Hollywood talk too much, but the characters had probably been optioned for movies for many years now.
Yeah.
That's where they acquire the right to acquire the rights. It's like a real estate option. You acquire the right to buy this piece of print land within a certain time period, but then you don't have to. And that goes back, I don't know how long, 12 years.
Yeah.
I think under option by various parties. But now finally we've reached the stage where they said, okay, we're actually acquiring the rights and we intend to go make a movie. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
And originally it was to be a theatrical release movie, but because of COVID and other reasons, but mainly because of COVID, Disney shifted all this stuff to streaming. And that seemed like a good idea anyway. So.
Yeah. Wow. Well, there it is. There it is.
That's the big news.
60 years, and it looks like we might be getting that Berenstain Bears movie.
Maybe. Got to keep our fingers. We'll pray to the great Hollywood, pray to Samuel B. Goldwyn, the spirit of Louis B. Mayer, to look kindly from Hollywood heaven down upon us.
I know I pray to Louis B. Mayer every night before bed. So.
He's not God. He's just like a demigod. I
think. Yeah. Well, you got to go through them to get to the big one. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. And thank you for observing the 60th anniversary, which nobody else in the whole world, except Bucks County Herald, I'm pleased to know, really seems to be, I think is very important. But I'm glad you do. Thank you.
That was my interview with Mike Berenstain. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you again to Mike for being on the show. You can find this show at BerensteinBearcast.org. You can find me on Twitter at BStainBearcast. And you can find me on Facebook at Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. If you happen to listen to the show on Spotify or Audible, why don't you go ahead and drop me a review? I would love to know what people think about the show, if people have been listening to it for 2 years, 3 years, 7.5 years, however long you've been listening. If you haven't left a review, please do so. And if you happen to bump into someone who likes podcasts, you should say, hey, there's this guy who does this Berenstain Bears podcast. And get this, he's been doing it for 7.5 years. And see how they respond. Who knows? It might be positive. Otherwise, thank you once again for joining me. And I'll see you all next time deep in Bear Country.